week you brought a friend?
Yeah, I have a friend. I got a nice little friend.
Hey! Is that Pam Pizza?
Yeah, he'll be joining us for the podcast today. It feels so weird to like have like merchandise of someone that you know.
Yeah, for real. That's great.
I wonder how people will react if I had one of these things.
Yeah, me too. What a crazy thought.
Yeah.
I would buy one.
I can dream, right?
Yeah.
I would hope you would. Dream,
I would definitely buy one. I would buy one and then I would put it right here for every podcast next to my Cartman's.
Really funny.
It would be weird. You would be in both frames. It would be confusing.
Yeah. I'm never off screen.
Nope.
I'm always doing something. And if you got one, I would put it, you'd probably right there. Bought a pillows. Absolutely.
No one would buy one of me. It would never happen.
I think you are a liar. I think people would love to buy a plush of you because I know I would. Oh, man, if they could, like...
I appreciate that.
Fam, if they could... Which is, like, I know that's not what... Makeshift doesn't do that stuff. Maybe, I don't know. But if they, like... If they, like, made your hair real hair, like, that'd be so... Like, if they didn't just make, like, a cartoony mold of it, like, if it was just fucking, like, Barbie hair, like, that'd
what
be rad.
I have to send them in my real hair to put on the doll of me.
All 200-something of them, yeah.
I also just realized that we started this podcast by showing something on screen. So for the people listening at home, they're going to be like, what the fuck are they talking about?
I didn't... You know, okay... Actually, I was thinking about this. I was thinking about this maybe 10 minutes before I hopped in here. I was thinking about how, like, it is a blessing and a curse that we agreed to do visual and audio. It's a curse because, like, there's, like, more maintenance stuff, right? Like, I can't look too bummy. You know what I mean? I'm in front of people.
Right.
So, like, you know, yeah. But, however... It does make me make sure that my room stays clean. Like it can't.
That's a good point.
It can't get messed up. Like it just has to. It has to look. It has to look well.
I just have to keep this corner clean. Over there is a mess. I got two animals sleeping on my bed right now that you can't see.
It's pretty.
Like
good.
It's like just this little corner of my room. I keep. Pretty tidy, but even so, not that tidy. Like if I moved myself, you'd probably. Kind of see a bunch of wires and junk over there, so yeah. You know it helps a little bit.
That. Yeah, it at least keeps one section of the room.
Yeah,
clean.
Like my bed isn't even really properly made right now. Just this corner, corner is nice and neat.
there is laundry right next to me that like I just
there's laundry.
Yeah, there's laundry right next to me. It's clean laundry, but it's laundry nevertheless. I haven't folded it or anything like that.
You know what's even funnier is you showed off that plushie, but when you showed it off, so for the people at home, I just said, is that Pan Pizza? So they might be thinking you're holding up a pizza.
Oh no, I was holding my friend Rebel Taxi, me and Johnny's colleague, our friend.
yeah, good guy. He set the bar for a lot of the cartoon YouTubers out there.
Yeah, I was trying to explain to somebody that he's like our Simpsons. I don't know if they fully grasp the concept. Yeah. But.
We'll have to invite him on the pod someday. See if he wants to. He does his own. He does a lot of other stuff. So,
right.
He's a busy guy. You'll have to ask him because I think you know him better than me.
Maybe he'll just want to take a nap too, which is fine. We can take a sleepy pod.
Yeah, let's do a nap cast.
Sleepy pod. All right, guys. This is Cartoons That Nap. Thank you guys for joining us today.
All right, let's just cue the theme song so we can start talking about Futurama.
All right, let's do it.
I've been watching them for years. It's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a family guy that sucks. With a father from a hill, a burger family runs amok. The show and spies is the same guy, except he totally same. End of verse.
Let's watch cartoons that burn.
What the fuck is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse, the podcast about cartoons that say swear words. I am John Piricello. You might know me as Johnny Two Cellos. This is my co-host, Tariq, aka Tunerific Tariq. How are you, Tariq?
I'm all right. I'm all right. The film isn't all right, but I'm all right. How are you doing?
Let it be known that Tariq is all right. I'm also doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. Been working all day. And ready to talk about my least favorite Futurama movie. Let's do it. If you've been following along, you know we've been covering the Futurama movies, starting with Bender's Big Score, moving on to The Beast with a Billion Backs. And now we're covering Bender's Game.
Did you say billion or billium?
I said billion, but billium would have worked as well.
All right.
Beast with a Billion Backs.
I thought you did one of those things. You ever see like one of those like true false text tests where you write like T or F and like sometimes you like make it look like a T or an F so like the teacher gets confused? I thought you did one of those just now.
I've never tried that, but I like that. I like that strategy.
I'll just show you how it looks. It looks kind of funny.
That's super funny. If you we're confused about this. We had Billium of the YouTube channel Billium on last week, who is a charming and lovely man. And I had a great time chatting with him. It was a great time. We talked Beast with a Billion Backs and it was a good time. It was a good little chat. Chat about that movie. But today we got to talk about Bender's Game. Bender's Game, the third of four. And this is the first time you'd seen this one, correct, Tariq?
This is the first time I've seen the rest of them, though. Yeah, I have. And I think I've seen the first 3 minutes of this one. And okay. That's literally it. Because I remember like the die. And the then die, like after that, yeah. Everything.
The yellow, I will say the yellow submarine parody at the top rules. That's pretty cool. When they, the intro thing, when they go into the screen.
I think it is like nicely made, but even then, it's still my least favorite of all of these. The intros,
really?
Yeah,
I like it.
Because do you like it more than Beast with a Billion Backs' one? Because that has the.
I think I like them about the same. I don't know, but I'm also like a big Beatles guy, and I like that psychedelic art style.
Okay.
I like them about the same for different reasons, but I think the next one, the one coming up after this, might be my favorite because of the.
See, that's the where vocals. Like that's where my tie is. It's a tie between the next one and Bender's Big Score, but Bender's Big Score, I feel like, is only for like emotional reasons, sentimental reasons,
right?
But like,
yeah, I agree. I like the Bender's Big Score one because I resonate with the excitement of that show coming back a lot. was what was exciting about that intro.
It hinges on that. I feel like if you're like a person that's getting into Futurama now and you just kind of have all this disposable content in front of you, like you don't really get that impact that they were going for with that. So
I get it. I'll agree with you there. Bender's Game is this is their fantasy movie, which, you know, obviously the show is made by a bunch of dorks. They all love D&D and fantasy, but also like sci-fi is their thing for this show. And this is their first real foray into the fantasy world until Disenchantment a few years later. But so this has a very different feel. I do love the DVD art, the cover. It's really nice. I think the fantasy stuff looks really good. Actually, all of the covers of the DVDs for these movies are really nice. I think they
especially
look
the
really
last
good.
Three, because Bender's Big Score does look great, but it was before they were doing that old timey movie poster thing.
Agreed. Bender's Big Score is exciting. Same reason that the intro of it is exciting. It's like, Futurama's back. Here they are. But Beast with a Billion Backs, Bender's Game, Into the Wild Green Yonder, those DVD cases and covers are gorgeous. They're like beautiful, beautiful art. But this is like a really weird one. This one is really weird, and I think I can pinpoint why. I talked about it a little bit last week, And I've been talking about it a lot to myself this week because I'm making a video about these movies, spoilers, which actually that video will be out before this
podcast. I'm about to say it'll probably
so not spoilers. Reverse spoilers. Go watch it after this. So this, though, is this one is the one script out of all of these films that was written by a bunch of people.
Yeah, it has like that part stuff on it, right?
Exactly. And so every other, all three of the other movies were stories where the story credit went to whoever the screenwriter was plus David X. Cohen. And then the screenplay credit went to the, whatever the writer was who wrote the screenplay. This one, the story credit goes to Eric Horsted and David X. Cohen. Eric Horsted is, I guess, the guy who spearheaded this one in terms of various writers from the writer's room. But he's only credited as having written parts one and two of the script, whereas they have Michael Rowe and Eric Kaplan writing part three and David X. Cohen and Patrick M. Verone writing part four. And I definitely think that this is the movie that feels the most segmented out of all four of these movies. Like, you can feel that these each part was written by someone different, I think, at least to me.
I agree.
And I've gone over in my head, I don't know if this was just a time crunch thing, if it was just like, well, we need to get through this production and get it done, or if it was maybe a situation where like, oh, Mike, these other writers know the fantasy elements better than Eric Horsted, and so they should pen the scripts that are all about the fantasy stuff. Like, I could totally see that being the case too.
Right.
Which I guess, like, on paper, don't hate that strategy if that's what the situation was, but it just, again, this one feels, it feels like two halves of one, two, that each half of this movie feel very separate to me. Tariq,
yeah,
how'd you feel about Bender's Game? Give me the broad strokes. What do you think?
Okay, let's get down to brass tacks. Nah, I'm gonna be honest. Like, I know how, I don't know, anybody that listens to this podcast knows how much I love Futurama, but this is probably the most bored I've ever been watching Futurama. Like, I just, there were times where, like, I couldn't turn it off. Like, I couldn't turn it off because we had to talk about it. But, like, there were times, like, around the middle and the end where I'm like, man, how much longer is this? Like, what else is this? And I think my issue might come from, like, the same, it's kind of a problem I had with Beast with a Billion Backs, but it's really present here where it's like, I can't tell, like, what, and it's gonna sound stupid when I say it out loud, but it's like, I can't tell what the movie's about, meaning that I can't, like, what, who's learning something, like, what is the, I granted these are all technically the different episodes, but like, what's the arc, like, you know what I mean, like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like, I couldn't the whole time I was like, okay, so whose story am I supposed to be following? Who am I supposed to care about? Whose emotions am I supposed to care about? Like, that kind of thing. And yeah, they, and then that thing happens that you and Billiam told me about. And like, yeah, I feel like if I didn't know and I saw this, I'd probably be pissed off if I came in here really excited and you told me that it's never brought up again.
Right. Because it is a good reveal, honestly. Like, it's not even a bad reveal.
Right.
It's just annoying that it's ignored forever after this.
Yeah. So, what's the guy's name?
Igner. The youngest of mom's sons.
We find out that Igner is related. Not related. We find out that Igner is Farnsworth's son.
Yes. With mom.
With mom. And, yeah, they just kind of don't do anything with that for the rest of the show. And that's really dumb, because like, this, I mean, she's related to Fry, and like, you know what I mean, like,
and Hubert, he's got a brother,
and Hubert, yeah, so like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that could, like, could happen, and they just don't do. And also, okay, I have my notes too. It's like, with Beasts of a Billion Backs, like, while even though I did kind of feel like it was segmented, and I said that before, it's like, when the movie started, I immediately knew like what it was about. Like I knew where it was gonna go. I knew like, okay, there's this thing in the sky, like, you know what I mean? Like, and they have to deal with it, yada yada yada. But
there's
like,
a clear through line in Beast of the Billion Backs.
I got half an hour into this movie. That's to your point about the fact that it's segmented. I got half an hour into this movie and I'm like, has the movie started yet? Has whatever the overarching story that's supposed to happen started yet? Because they kind of just do a Futurama episode for the first half hour.
First two half hours, I would say, are two. I'd say the first two parts feel like two Futurama episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it switches to all the fantasy stuff, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was weird. I'm not really too big on blaming them for that. I don't really necessarily think that's all the way their fault. Just it's difficult to write something that has to be a film and has to be four episodes of a television show at the same time. So I get it.
Yeah, and I weirdly, you know, I also think they did it pretty darn well 3 out of 4 of these. So it's like good on them, you know? Like I think at least I love Bender's Big Score and I quite like Beast of the Billion Backs and Into the Wild Green Yonder. And this is the only one where it really feels like you can really see the seams and it doesn't quite work on both levels for me. Whereas I think they were kind of able to make it work pretty well for the other ones. I guess I've been thinking about it a lot this week because I've been doing this video and I think like the only thing I can really determine is the through line is Bender's thing. Obviously it's Bender's game, but it's like Bender's the first act is him the first part is him figuring out that he can imagine things and using his imagination for the first time and discovering D&D. And then that leading him into madness, basically, where he's just becoming way too into that. And then the second part is the ramifications of how deep into madness he's fallen, where he's in the insane asylum. And then the second half of the movie is him literally having fallen into the fantasy world. And like they're in this fantasy world that is somehow facilitated through his imagination, which I still do not understand.
Right. Yeah.
I still do not understand it. Every time I watch this movie, I try to follow the story with the crystal and the anti-backwards crystal and the dark matter and how that makes Bender. And I don't get it. I do not understand it. I can't follow it. And I know it's like all nonsense science. That's fine. But I still can't even follow it by its own pretend logic. You know what I mean? All I know is that somehow the dark matter stuff facilitates Bender's imagination becoming real for a minute, for a little bit of the movie. And I just don't get it. It feels real sweaty to me.
I get you. I agree. It was hard for me to just get with the program with this one, man. It was hard for me to kind of just like submit to everything that was going on. This might be some kind of personal thing, just because like I wouldn't say that I'm like into this kind of stuff in general, you know what I mean? So
right.
We talked about how like, you know, like sometimes people will say that this is their favorite of the films, and I think that might be their reasoning, maybe. If like,
I think it definitely is. I think it's definitely because this is the one fantasy thing they did in Futurama, and there's definitely a lot of crossover for sci-fi fans and fantasy fans. Like those are two big genres of like of fiction that attract like very that attract like a certain kind of nerd, you know what I mean? Like that's, like, and more than that, there's so many of us who love this kind of stuff. And I really like fantasy. I think fantasy's great. I'm more of a sci-fi guy, but I like fantasy a lot. And I super love Disenchantment, which is now like these same writers tackling tackling that genre. Right. But I think my big problem with the fantasy elements of this one is they just feel like a parody of fantasy versus its own like take on fantasy.
I agree. It was a lot of it was a lot like, oh, look what we did with Hermes. Oh, look what we did with Amy. Like,
right.
A lot of it. And then it got tired really quick, especially for somebody that doesn't care about that kind of stuff, because it's like,
right.
Okay. Yeah. It's a funny character design, I guess. Like, but that's kind of like all it gets out of me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, yeah. There isn't, anything else that like I latched onto. And then I didn't think it was like necessarily funny either, but I don't know if it was just because I didn't I hate talking like this, you know. I don't do like videos.
We're also generally so positive on this podcast, right? So like, yeah. but I do have things like about this I like that we'll talk about later, so let's get some of the stuff we don't like out of the way.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know if it's just because I didn't necessarily care about what was going on, but yeah, I didn't. I do have a couple laughs written down, but like significantly less than everything else.
I think the fantasy stuff is especially where I stop laughing.
Yes.
And I think it feels like they, I don't know. And I can't tell if like to them, the joke was just, isn't it funny to see our characters, but fantasy versions? Like, you know what I mean? Like it felt like that was enough for them in the scripting phase to be like, people will think this is funny. You know what I mean? They'll think it's funny that Leela's a centaur and Fry is Frido instead of Frodo, and then he becomes Gollum, or you know, all that stuff. It's like,
right.
It's got all of these parody aspects. And it feels like they were so fixated on that stuff that the jokes were really lacking, especially in the back half. And I kind of understand that it is hard. It's got to be hard to both write good jokes and completely transcode your entire show into a new genre. You know what I mean? So like, I understand and appreciate that that's really hard, because this is it's different than something like Disenchantment, where you're writing a fantasy world from scratch. And this is one where you have to bring characters that people already know from a sci-fi setting into a fantasy setting, but also make the fantasy setting somehow relatable to the audience. So I get that there's the conundrum there of like, how do we do this effectively? But I will also say that I've always felt like Futurama has done such a good job making all of its sci-fi stuff feel unique to its own world building, even when it is inspired by or taking from a different sci-fi. It doesn't feel like this fantasy part of the show is capable of doing that in the same way, which is a bummer.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Because that's the thing, right? Is that I don't watch a lot of either. I don't watch a lot of fantasy and I don't watch a lot of sci-fi. And I could still like I know they're parodying certain things or making fun of certain things when they do certain sci-fi stuff. But like, that doesn't affect anything. It still feels like Futurama doing Futurama.
Right.
And I feel like there's a way to do that here. And like you said, they do that in Disenchantment. So it's like, I feel like there's a way that they could have done that here. But a lot of it is just like, it's just like very, very blatant parody stuff. And I can't even say that. I feel like even by the time period where this came out, I feel like the Gollum parody stuff was kind of tired. Like the,
yeah,
this guy was kind of in everything, man. Like, and they still
this came
do
out
it
like 08. Yeah, that's true. You're not wrong about that. Yeah, for me, it really does come down to the fantasy stuff not really working for me. And then, like, weirdly, because the through line is Bender, which is fine. That's the one thing that connects to all four parts here is like right. Bender's, and then they kind of have this Farnsworth mom story in the background, but because it was so hard to follow, I'm not emotionally connected to it at all. And that Absolutely. Seems to be like, that's where you're supposed to be emotionally invested. That's where the big emotional turn comes. Is the reveal.
They kind of play around a little too much, man, because they keep doing that bit where they're like, oh, I know a secret about him, and here I am, I'm going to say it. And then, like, we don't fucking hear it for, like, until, like, literally the last episode. So, like, I can't care, because, like, you keep turning it into a farce. So, like, and I mean, that's fine, though, because it was funny. Like, I thought the bit was funny. I thought it was a funny bit. But, like, yeah, if that's supposed to be the emotional crutch, I don't know if that's probably the way they should have. I don't think that's how they should have went about it, maybe.
You know what I want to do is I don't think I've ever done it with this one, but I want to sit down and watch the Hulu version, like watch the broadcast version, actually split up and see what it feels like. You know what I mean? Like, will I be able to track the individual stories when they're cut down better than I can track the overall story? And will that make the full journey work better than me trying to figure out what this movie's about? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm curious if that works. So I might do that at some point here. I mean, this is just me geeking out. This is just like video creation geeking out about stuff, but I would like to have hard copies of those versions. Like, I need to download copies of the like episodic versions of these movies just so I can like have them on hand.
They didn't throw them in like a season DVD or something like that.
They just put out the individual movie DVDs. They never released the hard copies of them split up like that. But currently that's the only way you can stream them. Like that's how on Hulu they're all split up.
I was thinking about this earlier, which is like, would they even care to fix that? Like, I don't even know if like at this point would they even care to fix that? Like, to actually just kind of put them up as
put
films.
The movies up.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I guess it's like, it also maybe depends on maybe the question is actually, do they have the rights to that? Like there could be a difference between the movie rights and the broadcast rights to those things. I know that Netflix had Futurama, it had them in, I believe it had them in movie form, and now Hulu has them in episodic form. But also, I think Netflix had the show in its production seasons, not its broadcast seasons, and Hulu has it in its broadcast seasons.
So this is what I do know. I do know that Netflix had this show in the same Hulu order because I remember.
Oh, it did.
I remember, but I didn't know what the hell was going on because I remember in college, I was with someone and they were watching Futurama, and then like they clicked on it and I was like, "There's not 10 seasons of Futurama. What the hell is going on?" Like I was really confused, but now I get it. Now I understand.
Yeah,
I do remember that they had it in that order.
I still get comments that are just like, you said there are 7 seasons of Futurama, but there are 10. And I'm like, just do a Google. Just do a little Google.
Come on, man.
You can figure it out. I feel like I explain it in videos a lot, but people just like ignore it.
In one ear and right out the other one with stuff like that, man. You could literally say something and people would just go, yeah, well, actually, if you think about it, and it's like, I thought about it, man. It took a long time to make this.
Right.
I thought about it, and I don't think you're right. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything in the fantasy world that I really laughed at or liked. I thought it was weird that they made, like, I think it made sense to do, in the context of Futurama, it makes sense to do the big Farnsworth-Igner showdown to make it a Star Wars parody, but that felt so weird within the fantasy thing. Like, oh, you're going to do a Star Wars parody in your fantasy parody of your sci-fi parody. That's so much. What's going on here? And also like, I was just kind of shocked that like, this was the movie they chose to do a Star Wars parody in when they had 4 movies here to do. And I'm like, you're really only going to do, you're going to only do a Star Wars parody for your Dungeons and Dragons one? That's weird. It's a weird choice.
It's really ass backwards.
I do think I laughed at like Zoidberg being the tunneling horror. I liked that stuff, and like Leela fighting him and taking him out, or like killing him, thinking he was the tunneling horror. And then I laughed when he goes, to think that removing only one of my two hearts. And then she says, wait, what are you doing? And then she pulls out the other heart and he dies. but then there's then afterwards she's just like, I don't regret anything. I killed the tunneling horror. And Zoidberg's like, the tunneling horror? I hate that guy. He's like, not the tunneling horror. She just killed an innocent Zoidberg. Which is pretty funny. I thought there's some funny stuff in there. But man, like so much of the fantasy stuff just washes over me. I just, I don't care that much about it, which is such a bummer.
That's actually where my notes stop. I didn't realize it, but I'm looking at it and like, the two notes are the stuff that I already said, where I say the medieval stuff is kind of boring and it stops being funny and stuff happens. And then that's it. I think my last note says, yeah, I'm good. I don't remember what that meant. I think I was just really tired.
I think it means you're done
then.
Taking notes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's when I tapped out.
Well, then let's talk about the first two parts, because I actually think the first two parts are pretty good. I think there's some really fun stuff in them. Even though it doesn't feel like they connect enough to the overall story. But in the first one, I think the Space Demolition Derby is cool. I really love the sequence where they steal the ship and then they fly to the Demolition Derby and it does that song Rocket Ship. And it's just like this really cool sequence and really good sound design of it flying by. I really like that sequence.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty cool.
That is pretty rad.
That's good stuff.
I have filling the tank up with Nobel Prize winner sperm is nuts.
And that's where they start to talk about the dark matter stuff, I guess. Right, it's like, that's where they try to tie in the dark matter stuff. That's a funny line. And then the Bender learning to have an imagination stuff, like, I don't care that much about it. I do think it starts to get funny when he starts to like lose it and see the world as like his fantasy world. You know what I mean? Like when he's like trying to lance the dragon, which is just a bus, and he gets run over by a bus. When Fry's just like, I think you need to stop playing Dungeons and Dragons. And he's like, I agree, buddy. I think you're right. And then he just goes insane and jumps out his window. Like, he's just like,
You know what? Okay. Let me bring this up. This is one of the notes that I took. I never realized how little sense the architecture of Bender and Fry's building makes.
It makes no sense, and it never has.
Because, like, you see the building, and, like, they do all the establishing shots. The windows are always vertical. But when you're inside, they're always horizontal. And I never realized that until they do a specific shot in this.
and you want to know why? Here's exactly why.
Okay,
it all stems from the very first episode that it was in, which is iRoommate. And the whole bit, the whole them pulling the rug out from under us at the end of that episode is that Bender's apartment, which we previously thought were just little closets that the robots would stand in, it revealed that, oh, they have this whole big apartment that's the closet behind that. So
it's built to look like that.
It's built to look like that because otherwise it would have given away what they revealed at the end of the episode. And they constantly change the architecture. Like I think that might be the first time we really see their kitchen in this one. And there's episodes, like there's the episode Love and Rocket where he can open up the window to like talk to the ship. They just, you know, it's kind of like the Simpsons house. It changes depending on what they need early on. But yeah, it doesn't make any sense because it's like, and then also there's room. So Fry has his own room in the closet of Bender's apartment, which is the little thing, you know, it's
right.
I think they just abandoned what it was originally.
Yeah.
To give them a place to live,
man. I normally wouldn't care about this kind of, but it just kind of weirded me out. Like because I don't know what it was about the establishing shot they did, but it was very, very close. And I was like, wait, what the fuck? Why are the windows like? And it's crazy because you brought that up, but all I could think about was the ship. And I was like, how the hell did the ship see them? if it's like that. And then, of course, like, that scene doesn't make any sense anyway, because the ship rings the doorbell from outside of the... All
right,
I'm going to
shut up. It doesn't make sense. None of it makes sense. It's a bad... It's just... It molds to what they need, and that's it.
Right. They do a joke in this that's like a Simpsons joke that I hate. So I hate them both. But it's... you ever see the episode where I think Homer gets into, like... He gets into, like, a fight with a badger. And then Lisa says, like, Dad, you're all scratched up. Shouldn't you go to the hospital? And he said, well, yeah, maybe. Maybe I can get them to look at this. And then he pulls his shirt up, and then all his organs are just like, and they do that here where, like, Soyberg just, like, opens the... I fucking hate that.
That one. Yeah. That's so funny, because I thought... it does gross me out, but I did think there was some funny... There are some funny moments in it, but I actually, funny enough, thought you were referring to one other thing in the same movie, which is Fry doing a joke. He's like, I never thought I could swallow a softball, but I did my best and I did it.
I don't
and he
hate
pulls
that.
Up his shirt and he's got like the big, but he's got the big thing. He's like, oh, that's not it.
The right, she blows. I think that's funny.
That's actually a good joke.
I think that's funny. It's the characters that I care about exposed organs that I'm like, what the fuck? And it's just, well, okay, so I'll shoot some bail and say that it makes much more sense for this to happen in Futurama than it does in The Simpsons. That shouldn't, the way that Simpsons joke plays out is like surreal because, like, okay, so the only way I can attribute it is going to that, the Treehouse of Horror, fuck, I forget the name of it, but it's a classic one. It's the one where Homer, he keeps like going to different dimensions and time traveling. Then like the last one has like,
oh yeah, yeah, shit. Yeah.
And like,
I can't remember the name of it, but that's a classic.
Right. And then Lisa's like, at least I think it's this segment. I'm probably being dumb, but Lisa's like, Dad, your hand's in the toaster. And she like freaks out. And he like, it's like this really big deal that his hand's in the toaster. And then you compare that to like when he pulls his shirt up and like there's just organs out and Lisa just stands there and she doesn't react. And
the crazier thing is one of those is in a Treehouse of Horror where that kind of thing actually would play.
Right.
And they freak out about it. And the other one's in a regular episode. That's wild.
Yeah.
That is wild. I actually, you know, what's funny is I actually thought about weirdly thought about the hand in the toaster joke when you were talking about the badger thing. That's such a good joke. But the funnier thing is after he gets it out and he's calm, he goes, it's in there again. it's so funny. I love it so much. Oh man. Actually, going back though, I just thought about this because I was thinking about Fry and Bender on the ship at the beginning of the episode, and there I really like. There's a delivery I really love, and it's when it's after Bender is like, at the kids make fun of him for not being able to like imagine anything, and he goes, and it, just the way he delivers, Fry, do I have an imagination? Fry's like, I don't know, Bender. Were the other kids making fun of you? it's like a mother daughter situation, or like a son and a mom and son situation, or something. And then just the way Bender goes, they said I couldn't imagine things, which is very funny delivery. I love it a lot.
I like when they talk to each other like that because I like. In Devil's Hands, where like Bender's just kind of like Fry's mom, at like the in the beginning.
Oh yeah, at the holophone recital.
Right. Yeah. I hope to see you later for tea.
Love it, a classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, there are some really. I think the first half of this movie does have some really funny stuff. Like that's really funny. I think. And I do think that some of like Fry or some of Bender going crazy is really fun. I don't especially love the whole Ben or the whole Leela's anger problems subplot.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's like they give her a shock collar. She's got like a it's just weird. And I feel like it never really, it kind of ties to her whatever the heck lesson she learned in the fantasy world about violence or whatever. But it, I don't know, it's not my favorite. And it feels like, I don't know, like I just don't like it when the show is like, oh, the woman is being too strong and abrasive. We better like, you know, take her down a notch. And it feels like Futurama maybe does that a few too many times over the course of the show. But I mean, they kind of do. We'll talk about this one next week, because Into the Wild Green Yonder has some weird commentary on like gender stuff too. But but this one, at least part one is like got the fun. Part one has the fun Demolition Derby, the good Bender Fry stuff, Bender starting to lose his mind. I think that all works. That all works for me.
I thought all of that stuff was, I thought all that stuff was fine. I thought it was just like a normal Futurama episode.
It feels like an episode.
Right. It was just like, I think what the only thing, and again, it's not even the episode's fault, but the only thing that like had me raising my eyebrows was like, okay, this is cool, but what the hell is the movie about? Like, that's kind of just what my brain was doing at a certain point. Again, it's not the episode's fault.
And then I think part two actually is probably the funniest part of any of these. Because part two brings us back to the HAL Institute, which was from the same place as Insane in the Mainframe, where Bender and Fry were sent. And we get to see all those characters again, and they're still very funny. Like the Mad Hatter bot telling everyone to change places. Roberto saying like, they tried to make an insane robot, but they failed. You know, and that was like, I love Roberto. Anything Roberto is funny. When he stabs the vending machine robot and he like coughs up red candy, like it's blood. Basically. That stuff is super funny. And I like a lot of the like any robot insane asylum stuff made me laugh a lot. And then the other thing I really like in this one is Walt, Larry, and Igner, the mom's three kids, trying to go steal the crystal and pretending they're owl exterminators. I just laughed every time Igner was like, "We're owl exterminators." I thought that was good. Funny deliveries there. Those are really good. And then also like, and there's a part where Farnsworth just has a trained owl. He attacks them with his trained owl, which makes me laugh on its own for some reason.
Is part two the part that, because there was this bit that killed me, because it was just kind of like, what the fuck are you doing? It's with the kill bots. It says all kill bots to section 15. What did she say? What did you say? And they're both shooting already. So they like turn to each other and like kill each other.
Yes, that is in part two. Part two is definitely the funniest. Yeah, like that's really funny. I also crack up my favorite line in probably it makes me laugh every time. It's the one joke I think of in this movie that like is a standout joke. And it's when they're sneaking into mom's like facility or whatever, her dark matter facility. And the professor falls from like a really high height and he just lands on his feet. Oh, yeah. He just like perfectly lands. And he goes, huh? So that's why they call me the cat man.
Yeah, which,
that's super funny. That makes me laugh every single time. That's so stupid and funny.
It's pretty funny. There's another part where he's, there's a line I wrote down because I wrote it down because I thought it was the funniest line so far, just because it's so stupid. I think he's talking about Igner's his name, right? I already forgot.
Igner is his son, yes.
Yeah, so I think he's talking about Igner, and he says, "So it makes me embarrassed to call myself homo."
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's talking to Cupert in that. I think he's being in, he says like something like it's like a full-on, it's a full-on biology joke where and he's like even being in the same genus as you makes me embarrassed to call myself homo.
Yeah, there it is. Okay. That's how it starts.
It's really funny. Yeah, that's a really good science joke. It's really funny. Right. Yeah, man, it's like it feels to me like I like everything. I like this movie until it hits the fantasy world. I don't love it before that, but I like it. There's a lot I really like. And then as soon as it hits the fantasy world, it just feels like it reaches a screeching halt. And it's a bummer because I know a lot of people like it, and I know a lot of people were waiting for them to do a fantasy thing in Futurama, because like these are definitely like fantasy dorks as well, sci-fi and fantasy dorks, but it does feel I almost wish they had just done like something closer to one of the anthology episodes to do a fantasy world, you know what I mean? Like
right, actually, you know what, that kind of goes to the next point I was gonna make, but go keep going because I think you're right.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, they, I mean, I guess I don't love those episodes that much in the revival when they do the anthology stuff, other than Reincarnation, which is really good. They have like themed anthology ones, which I feel like a fantasy one could have worked, because you eliminate yourself from having to explain why the fantasy world exists, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can just do something fun with it. You can just be like, here's the fun parody. In the same way that they did Leela in the Wizard of Oz world, you know what I mean? Like the same, like that same kind of vibe. Or even if they had done a What If machine again, which obviously they only did two of, but if they had, you know, that explains it. What if we lived in a fantasy world?
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's all you need to know, you know? So I don't know. It feels like they, I wish I could have bought more the explanation for how we got to the fantasy world. I wish I could just even followed it. I didn't even need to buy it, just followed it.
Right. I do think your point about it being like, maybe if they like anthologied it or whatever, like broke it up, because I think maybe it's the time. Maybe it's the time and the fact that they're trying to tell this story with it that's hindering it. Because like, again, like I said, I don't particularly like a lot of fantasy stuff. However, one of my favorite Phineas episodes is a fantasy one. It's I think it's called Excalibur. It's like they do something similar. Like they put them in a completely different timeline and like they're going on a quest and all of this shit. And like, but it was 11 minutes. So like, I got in, got out. There was enough time to do a lot of really dense jokes, make it really funny. The jokes don't just hinge on, okay, let's see what they turned this character into. All the characters are more or less the same, except a few. I don't know. I felt like that worked better for me personally. And I feel like maybe if they did do something like that, that'd be pretty rad too. I feel like, honestly, man, like that would have been a good film in general, like regardless of even doing fantasy, right? If they just use the fact that they had to break these up into four things,
right,
to their advantage.
If they did a what if machine with four different what ifs,
but they were all half an hour.
Yeah, and like, just do a full episode what
yeah
if. That yeah, could have been great.
Yeah,
that's a good idea. We should call the past,
please.
see if they can do something. We can do something about this.
They might turn that one into this.
I did just remember, well, I think I talked about this in another episode. They also have the return of Nibbler without any explanation for how he returned from having eaten himself.
Okay, yeah. that's so funny.
he just got kidnapped from where? From his own stomach. He got kidnapped, I guess. And then they also, like I said this in other episodes, and I say it in the video that many of you have maybe already seen, but him, Fry saying, "You didn't wipe our memory, so we didn't forget that you talked." It's so dumb. That's bad dialogue. It doesn't make sense.
It's dog shit. Just, you forgot to do this thing that I didn't know that you did.
Exactly. It's dog shit. You don't know about the memory wipes. It was memory wiped. Right. It's so annoying. It annoys me so much. But I also did just remember another joke that I actually like in the fantasy sequence. This is a really funny joke. It's when they're going through the Cave of Hopelessness and they're like, they're worried about the name. They're like, "Oh no, should we be in here?" And he's like, "It's just named after Reginald Hopelessness," that's a funny joke. I like that a lot. And then the tunneling horror shows up. Because Reginald Hopelessness was the first person to be eaten by the tunneling horror, so it immediately comes back around.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so it's immediately, yeah, no, we probably shouldn't be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, but again, I just don't know. I don't love the fantasy stuff, and it's always so jarring to me when it switches between the sci-fi and the fantasy. Like, when they whipped into the fantasy world, it was like, this feels weird. Like, this feels weird. And then even when they end, it reaches the climax in the fantasy world, and immediately we're pulled back into the sci-fi world, and it's just like, what am I watching? Like, I don't love that. I do think there's some funny, you know, I don't hate the moments between Ignor and the professor at the end when he finally like comes around and hugs him and they both eat the crystals. And I like Ignor saying, "We both eat the crystals." Like, the way he says it is pretty funny. Yeah. But I just wish they had done more to make me really care about that bond and relationship and what it meant overall. And I think it's a bummer. It's a bummer that didn't work out well.
Is this where we found out that Wormstrom is Mom's ex?
That's a good question.
I wrote it down because I felt like I didn't know that.
I think this might be... Yeah, I think that might be right. I don't remember learning that before this.
Right. I've never seen the film, and I'm like, I didn't know that. Like,
which definitely implies that Mom's older sons are Wernstrom's kids. And then
that's actually pretty funny that
it is
the slightly more competent ones are Wernstrom's.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Ignor's related to Fry, so
that's true too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Might be some like Simpsons gene stuff going on there.
the first explanation for why Homer is stupid before the crayon.
Yeah, okay. Which both, I think frankly, both of them are dumb.
Both are bad.
Yeah.
Yes.
I want to reiterate that they both come from my least favorite era of the show, and I think they're both dumb.
Right. Hey, it looks like this is just a Simpsons tangent, but it looks like Matt Selman's kind of like primary showrunner right now. It seems like he's doing more episodes this coming season than Al is.
I feel like I was talking to Nick about this a couple months ago, but like, yeah, I noticed that even in like the last season, you know how like, which is something that Simpsons always did, is that they'll, when the episode ends, the first executive produced by would be the showrunners, and then the second would just be Matt and James and Sam. When they did it a few times in the last season, I just remember seeing Matt. And I remember going like, huh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember going like, huh, this might mean something. I think this might actually mean something.
I think it does, because it looks like every season, because Al Jean show ran for obviously so many years, but then starting with season like 23, every season there would be a few episodes that he and Selman co-show ran those episodes. And it was like,
got it.
It was three episodes for a few seasons, and then four, and then five, and then like, and then season 31, they co-ran seven. It seems like now in season 32, that seems to be where they started letting him do his own show running for some episodes. And honestly, like, I think he's the choice, man. He's done a lot of episodes I like over the years. He's been there for a while. He's done a lot of stuff that was. He was on the movie. He was like, I think he was like the head writer on The Simpsons Game. Yeah, he's been like a big part of The Simpsons for a long time. So I'm very stoked for him. And I hope, and you know, like, I mean, we've echoed this for a long time, but I like and appreciate The Simpsons changing showrunners. It was a thing they did for so many years, and I wish they had rotated more. Hate Al Jean. Like, I love Al Jean. Like, I'm not gonna hate him, but I just like the fresh blood thing. Get new people in there.
Take it in a new direction, man. Like, if you're gonna make it, I had an uncle that, like, when he was in traffic and somebody was driving stupid, and he was like, he would always say, like, if you're gonna drive, then drive. And that's kind of how I feel about this show. Like, if you're gonna make it, then make the show. Like, you know what I mean? Like, do something different. Take it in a different direction, do stuff that we haven't seen before, because like I said, like, you know, like, Al Jean is really funny and he's really smart and he's made some of the best episodes of the show. And even though people don't like his extremely long run where he show ran, that wasn't the first time he show ran, because he show ran, what was that, 3 and 4, like, so with Mike, so like.
Yes, he show ran 3 and 4 with Mike Reese,
right?
Which are, it's honestly, the more I watch 3 and 4, they like, I mean, it's funny. This is just the case for me for every early Simpsons season. The more I watch a season, the more I'm like, this is the best one. And then I watch another season, I'm like, wait, this is the best one.
you gotta hard stamp it, man. I hard stamped 7. I locked in 7. That's my answer. 7 is always gonna be my answer.
I'm going to hard stamp it at some point, but I think I need, you know what I think I'm going to do though? I think I'll have a hard stamp once we talk about those early seasons here on the pod. Once I've really talked through them, I feel like that's when I'll be able to be like, now I know which one I like.
That's when you'll be able to go, yeah, it's 16. That's it. That's the one.
Season 16 is the best one.
Yeah. I can't get enough of Jazzy and the Pussycats. I think that's the only 16 episode title I know, and that might not be 6. If it's not 16, I'm gonna be pissed. Somebody in the comments will let me know, I guess.
Probably.
Yeah,
you better let us know in the comments. Yeah, it's funny, I don't know, like, my views on The Simpsons keep changing over the years. Like, I still think seasons, like, still for me 1 through 8 are just like the height of television for me. Like, I love them so much. But for a long time, I was like a season 6, 7, and 8 guy. And I still really, really love those. But like, all of a sudden, some of those early seasons are really starting to stand out to me. Like I grew like a deep affinity for season 1 within the last few years, even though it's not my favorite one.
I think I'm just fascinated by season 1.
Yeah, me too. It's definitely partially that. It's because season 1 is it's a very different show. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't represent what I ultimately would love most about The Simpsons, but it does do things that are so different and kind of bold and unique that no other Simpsons does, that I go back and look at it, I'm like, wow, that's crazy that this was the first season of The Simpsons. This is so different.
I think the first season has one of my favorite episodes of the show, which is There's No Disgrace Like Home, the shock therapy one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Just because it's like, it's a really good episode, but it's damn near not The Simpsons. Like, it's like,
yes,
Homer is the one that is concerned about the family. Like, and he pawns the TV, like, all of this stuff that would never happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think that's why I'm so fascinated by it. And it looks weird. Like, I like looking at season 1 because it just looks really, really weird. Like, they make a lot of really weird choices. But every once in a while, they'll do like a really great drawing. Like, yeah, I don't know.
And
the one you like a lot?
I was just going to say, I was going to bring it up. My favorite season 1 is Moaning Lisa.
Oh, that's not the one I was going to bring up that y'all know that you like. I noticed you like Crepes of the, it's called Crepes of Wrath, right? Is that the name of the episode?
Oh, I don't love Crepes of Wrath. That was the episode that I brought up because that was the first episode that aired in my life. Why I brought that one up. Yes,
because I'm old. All right. Yeah, I remember that.
But that is also another very interesting episode.
Like because he just speaks French.
He just speaks French.
Just subtitles
and there's
time.
The whole subplot about their foreign exchange student trying to steal the nuclear plans from Homer. It's wild. It's got a lot going on. Moaning Lisa, though, is my favorite season one episode and one of my favorite episodes of the whole show.
It's good.
But it's another one that feels very different. It's like a very different feeling than a lot of the other Simpsons stuff. And you know what's interesting looking at this now? There's No Disgrace Like Home. I like Moaning Lisa. You know what those two have in common?
What was that?
They were written by Al Jean and Mike Reese.
It's full circle, man. Yeah. Baby, we just proved the thesis. There we go. I mean, we did season one. Yeah, there it is. Did the science on season one.
I love it.
We just did more science than what's in this entire film. Let the record be known.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, man. But yeah, it's funny. Like I always thought of, you know, I but even like going back looking at season two of The Simpsons, which is still run by those same three dudes, feels very different than season one.
Very. Yeah.
But season two has some like classics, man. I mean, Bart Gets an F is the first episode of season two.
Doesn't it fucking start with Bart Gets an F, which is like a really great episode.
It's like an all timer.
Yeah.
Such a great episode.
It has my favorite bit of character animation in the history of the show where Bart just breaks into tears. It's relentlessly heartbreaking. Like I make fun of it. I'll use it sometimes in my videos to like make fun of people. But
yeah,
it's so good because I've never seen crying animated that well. Right. Like he breaks. He literally breaks in half.
It really sells it. It really sells it. Like you feel so heartbroken for Bart. But there are so many, like, I mean, even just the second one, Simpson and Delilah, the one where Homer gets the hair,
that's
hair,
the
growth
hair one.
Formula.
Okay, yeah.
All
right.
Yeah. Dead Pudding Society is such a good episode.
Again, vastly different, but
yeah. One Fish, Two Fish, Blowfish, Bluefish, dude.
Right.
That's a crazy episode. Family. Where Homer thinks he's gonna die.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's and wild.
It's funny to think about that one, thinking about them dealing with the fact that Homer might die. Because they, you know, like they do it again when the show was more fully realized in Triple Bypass. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see how they both handle the emotion and what the series was and what it became.
Right.
Even though that's just, they're like, isn't Triple Bypass is like four, right? So they're like only two seasons apart, but they do it totally differently.
Yeah, it's season four. Yeah. Yep, super differently.
Isn't Dancing Homer in there too?
Dancing Homer is early. That's like episode five. Dude, the whole season is wild. Like it's also got Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, where they introduce Herb. Which I wish they had gone back to Herb. Like, they did two, and I love them both. And I can't believe they never brought him back.
I thought I was, like, I don't know if I missed something, but I thought about this maybe a couple of days ago. I'm like, so why not?
Like, I know.
You do everything
else
now.
Is it hard
now?
To get Danny DeVito? They're just having a hard time getting DeVito in there? It can't be that.
I love Danny DeVito, but it can't be that hard. I feel like he would want to do it.
Right. The other two that I really love in season two is I really like Three Men in a Comic Book. Three Men in a Comic Book isn't very funny, but I just connect to that story. And I really like the climax of them, like, you know, who's falling? They have to save one of the three kids instead of save the comic book. But season two also has Lisa Substitute, which is like just an all-timer in my opinion.
My friend Ed from college, that's his favorite episode.
That was one that as a kid I never It was like on a, it was on a V. I have all these VHSs, but I had them as a kid, and I had Lisa Substitute on one of those VHSs. And I remember watching it and being, it being kind of the one that I wouldn't watch that often, because I was like, oh, it's just like, it's not as funny. It's kind of more emotional. And I watched it a few months ago when I got these VHSs again for my little tiny CRTV. And I, it was the first time I had watched it in a long time. And I just like it, it broke me. The you are Lisa Simpson broke me. It was like I was just like watching my tiny CRTV on VHS sobbing in my bed because I'm watching a 30-year-old Simpsons episode. It's wild. Oh man, I love the Simpsons. Good little Simpsons tangent there. I can't we gotta cover the Simpsons soon, man.
We gotta we had to pad the episode out with something, man. We had to give y'all something because it's kind of there isn't enough ways where we could go, yeah, man, I just kind of wasn't feeling.
We did a pretty good job, though. We did a pretty good job really discussing Bender's Game before we went on our Simpsons tangent. We we went through each little part. We talked about the fantasy stuff. We talked about the stuff that worked. We even ended more positively than negatively, I would say, that when we got to the stuff we liked towards the end. And I think that was a the way to do it. Come out thinking about the things we liked about it instead of the things we didn't like about it.
Yeah, it's just kind of hard to do this with this one because there isn't a lot of character stuff going on. Not like
exactly
or even like the last one, like.
And
there isn't just a lot of
Beast with a Beast with a Billion Backs has the whole the whole jealousy thematic like ties to everything, and there's a lot you can really pinpoint what journey Fry and Bender go on over the course of that movie.
Right.
This one I can't. I can only pinpoint that Bender goes insane and then creates a fantasy world, and then even the and then the solution of the movie is not about that. It has nothing to do with that. He just comes back through the portal with them and everything's fine. And the next movie, which we'll obviously talk about next week with a special guest, who you guys will all like, a good friend of ours. And but that is one. That's a movie that I feel is a little overstuffed. And I feel like it also you can really see the seams of it being segmented, not to the same degree as Bender's Game, but even though that's the case, there is some really strong character stuff that you can hold on to through most of it. Through it's and it's a lot of Fry and Leela centric stuff that I think works really well overall in Into the Wild Green Yonder. So we'll talk about that next week because that's definitely the highlight of that one for me. But man, it's we're almost done with these movies, man. We got one more.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we got one more. How you feeling? Did you at least though? Have you enjoyed this coming back to Futurama though?
I have. I miss Futurama. I really.
Yeah,
did.
we got to figure out when we get into those revival seasons, which you haven't seen much of, which will be really interesting. Right. And I do think just a heads up to the people at home when we cover those seasons, even though we've been going by production season for everything else. We got to split those in half because they're 26 episode production seasons. Mm-hmm. So we'll go season 6, part 1, season 6, part 2, season 7, part 1, season 7, part 2, which is going to be 13 episodes a piece each time. Yeah. We'll watch them in the correct order. They did air them slightly out of order in some of the seasons in the broadcast order. So we'll watch them in the proper order. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty minimal and it's, I'm excited to eventually get there, but we got to do Archer first.
We do.
and I don't know. Oof. We probably shouldn't go immediately back to Futurama. We got to figure out what the heck we're going to do after Archer. We got Archer coming up. We got a couple seasons of Archer coming up. Then we're going to do Rick and Morty season 5 when that's over and then back to Archer. And we'll probably stop Archer at Vice and then maybe try something else.
Right.
Cause there's still, well, then there's still 6 seasons after that of Archer to do.
Yeah.
But
so many cartoons, man.
So many. And I'd like, I'd like to start The Simpsons at some point. We got to do it at some point. Those are long.
I can't get enough of The Simpsons, man. I would.
It's going to be
those episodes would be 5 hours. Because I wouldn't shut the
Not only will
the
they be
up.
5 hours because we have so much to say, but they're also 20 to 24 episodes a season.
Okay, yeah. What is that too?
It's gonna kill us. It might... We might also have to split those. We might have to record them all in one go and then just say we're editing these half at a time. Because season 3 is 24 episodes, man. That's so much. We barely got through a 22 episode a season of Futurama. Season 6 is 25 episodes.
I think after a while they just kind of turn into 26 for a couple years.
I just got a good idea for what we're going to do to very ever so slightly stop us, to help us on that season. That season ends with Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 1. And then season 7 starts with Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 2. We should do a separate episode for Who Shot Mr. Burns.
Oh, you think so?
I think we should. There's so much. There's a lot to talk about with Who Shot Mr. Burns.
Who knows? So that the reason I know that there's a lot to talk about with those is because just when I thought I knew everything about them, when the Real Jims did his video, he did his video series about like who really shot Mr. Burns, just a whole bunch of fun theory stuff.
Right.
And in the first one he did, he was just kind of going over all the evidence that they used for Maggie. And the last thing he said blew my mind, which was something that I didn't realize, which is that when Mr. Burns asks, who's going to stop me? Maggie's the only one that doesn't look away. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, that is the sickest detail I've ever seen. I didn't even know that existed.
Maybe we got to get Jim's on for that one.
I would love to. We could just put his music under the whole podcast track. That'd be pretty good.
Oh, man. Well, got anything else? Any other cartoon stuff you want to talk about before we sign off on Bender's Game? Any other exciting things happening right now in the world of cartoons?
Exciting things happening in the world of cartoons.
There's a few new shows that are been announced.
Yeah, that's what
recently.
I was thinking about some of the
there's that the show the China Illinois guys got a show coming out on I think Paramount Plus.
Oh, so that is them.
Yeah, I'm pretty
sure.
It's
the Harper House thing.
Yes, Harper House.
Right. Okay.
It's interesting because the backgrounds look like look like a Fox animated show. Like the backgrounds are like they've got more of that vibe, but then the characters just look more like the what's the guy's name? Brad Neely, is that it?
But I know exactly.
And
I saw somebody call it like Family Guy, and it's like just because something has round eyes,
no, it doesn't look anything
mean
like
that. Yeah, stop it. We gotta stop this. Stop so it. Just like how you guys are sick of the art style, I'm sick of you guys lumping everything just because they have similar traits. I'm sick.
It
of
is
shit.
Weird though, because the backgrounds of the show are really like pretty detailed. And then the character models are actually not very detailed, like with those little round noses. It's an interesting contrast.
It's like the good dinosaur.
Yeah, it kind of is. It kind of is. That's a good comparison. They also just announced that, what was that show? Based on a Twitter account, Chicago
Party. I saw
Party
that thing
ant.
Too. Yeah.
I don't know anything about that Twitter account or that show. All I know is that it's going to be on Netflix and it's coming September 17th. We'll see. They're eating deep dish pizza in the photo. So it's, it's Chicago, but they're also eating it with their hands, which is not how you eat deep dish pizza. Come on, guys. Oh. It's a casserole. You have to use a fork. You have to.
Maybe they moved to Chicago.
Maybe they do.
And they don't know. You know what I mean?
Like or maybe that could be it. That could be it. Oh, man. This is only tangentially related. Apparently, Trey Parker, Matt Stone want to invest and buy Casa Bonita, which filed for bankruptcy in April.
You sent that article. Was that you that sent that? I just didn't read it. Like I saw the headline, though, and I just kind of chuckled a little bit.
Yeah, it's real. It's real. They want, and they, and it's funny. I was actually just listening to some old interviews with them for some of my videos, and they talked about that in one of their interviews, how they, A, they were talking about like maybe wanting to do a theme park one day. And then they immediately went into, well, we were going to buy Casa Bonita when they were in financial trouble, but we missed our opportunity. And now it's happening again. And they're like, I think you're going to do it. I think they're actually going to do it. And honestly, if they do it, I'm making the trip, man. My mom lives in Colorado now. I don't know how far from Casa Bonita my mom lives, but I'm going. I'm going to Casa Bonita. Man, good stuff.
That episode rules. I haven't seen that in years.
How you doing? How you feeling? You got anything else you want to talk about? Anything you want to get off your chest?
Nah, man, I'm on break. I am on vacation. All I got to do is just watch a bunch of stuff for this. That's literally all I'm doing.
Into the Wild Green Yonder, Archer season 2.
Mm-hmm.
We got to make sure we're caught up on Rick and Morty,
right? And which is like I was doing that anyway. So
right, same.
Loving Tuca and Birdie might be my favorite show that's airing right now.
Me too. It's so.
I saw a clip from this new Disney Channel cartoon called The Ghost and Molly McGee. I saw a clip. They've released.
Oh, I've heard about it, but I haven't watched a clip.
Honestly, after seeing that clip, I feel like that show might become my favorite show on TV. favorite animated show. Because I just kind of, it has like that energy that I really missed. You know what I mean? Like that. Like,
oh, yeah, I'm watching the theme song now.
Yeah, just the way it's animated and like the way it's voice acted. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna fucking love this. So.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that. That's going to be rad.
Ooh. Well, I'm going to check that one out coming in October. We got lots of cartoons happening. And I don't know. That's all I got. So I think it's probably where we should wrap this baby up.
We're going to call it on Bender's Game, even though we called it maybe 15 minutes ago.
But
it's fine.
Or we could keep talking about The Simpsons for a little bit. I don't care.
Yes. Actually, if we keep talking about The Simpsons, I might drink. So maybe we should stop.
Should we announce our guests? Should we announce our upcoming guests?
Ooh. Should we tell them? Should we rip the Band-Aid off?
We got at least four confirmed. Which
we do?
Should we?
One, two.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. All right, never mind.
Yeah,
I forgot
two of whom we've had before. Let's do it. All right, who we got into the Wild Green Yonder next week? Who we got, Tariq?
We got Nicktendo, good friend of mine, good friend of Johnny's,
friend of the show, as they say,
friend of the show,
Nicktendo.
Yeah, friend of the show, Nicktendo.
Very excited to have Nick on. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk Into the Wild Green Yonder, which is what he wanted to talk about. That was his requested movie of these movies. We almost punished him to make him talk about his least favorite, The Beast with a Billion Backs.
Every time we brought it up, you remember every time we brought it up, he would, no.
Then for Archer season 2, we're bringing back a guest we've had previously, the incomparable Offbeat Kiki. They are going to join us for Archer season 2, and it's going to be great.
Yes.
Then either for season 3 or 4 of Archer, we haven't figured it out yet. We're also bringing back much requested Whitney Van Lanningham of Whitney Vision. Very excited. And then for Archer Vice, our friend, one of our very good friends and just a lovely fellow.
Friend of the show. Yes, so many
D'Angelo.
Friends of the shows.
D'Angelo Edwards of Hats Off Media.
Hats Off Media.
Hats off. Hats off to all four of our guests who will be coming. And then, you know, we'll still be doing some that are just us. I think whichever of those Archer seasons that we don't have a guest on, we'll probably just do alone. And I think we're going to do our Rick and Morty season 5 by ourselves as well.
We didn't do a Rick and Morty alone.
Exactly.
All four we did with guests. So.
And so we'll try to keep doing just us and then bring in guests, you know, alternate it as much as we can. And I think that works great. I think it keeps us on our toes.
I agree.
And with that, I think it's time to say thank you to Mike Yunez for producing and editing our podcast. Thank you to Carrie Feek for thanks to Carrie Feek for incredible artwork, which we will put on some merch soon. We promise we'll get you some merch. Thank you to Jake Neutron for that theme song. It is stuck in my head most weeks. And thank you, Tariq, for talking about Bender's Game with me and getting through it, even though we didn't love this one.
Yeah, and thank you to Johnny for spearheading us talking about Bender's Game.
Yeah, and you know what? I think this is a good episode, so I think we really nailed it. I think we did a good job here.
I hope so.
I hope so. And with that, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you next week. Have a good one, folks. And
see you later. Bye-bye.
Are you eating pizza right now?
No, I'm not. Stop that.